In keeping with the last few months of my experience, this was a weekend that for myself, and I'm guessing for a lot of us, was fairly politically charged. We had our inauguration this weekend, this Friday. Our new president, President Trump, took office, and we saw some of the largest demonstrations opposing that we've seen in a long time, not just in Washington, D.C., but all over the country, including here in Pittsburgh. I've spent a lot of time the last few months really just sorting through, not even the last few months, the better part of the last year, as Donald Trump became more and more popular among the Republican candidates in the primaries up through the election and to today. Because for me, it's been so hard for me to see Donald Trump as anyone other than the guy who said some pretty awful things about women and about certain minorities, and it's very hard for me to separate myself from that, because at the core of who I am and who I believe God is calling me to be is someone who respects the dignity and the beauty of every person. And I'm not saying that our new president doesn't feel that way at all. It's just it's the way I felt listening to some of the things that he said in this last year. And I'm part of a privileged class, right? I'm part of someone who isn't really threatened at all by a lot of what has been said. But I have a lot of friends who are terrified by some of the things that have been going on, by some of the things that have been said. I've watched people who are part of minority groups and part of threatened groups, you know, we find out that they're creating, you know, anti-Semitic or anti-Muslim graffiti in order to make people think that people did it out of hate. I mean, like, we are so twisted up right now in the way we're responding to everything that's going on in politics. It's kind of a terrifying reality at times. And yet, I have to keep coming back and being comforted by the promises that God has given us, given to you, to me, to this whole world, that we are loved, and that we are forgiven, and that we are held in God's grace and mercy every day of our lives. And what that's helped me to see a little bit, even through today's readings, is to understand a little bit more of those who are different from me. And if there's anything that I think this Christian walk really forces us to do, it's to try to listen to people who don't think and don't see the world like we do. I watched as things have unfolded these last few months, and I think I finally realized, at least in part, what has drawn so many people to Donald Trump. And it's the fact that people feel listened to by him. I think his critics would say he's not listening to anyone, but the point is that the way people feel when they hear him talk is that there are people who have felt disenfranchised and have felt marginalized, who have felt they have been losing parts of who they are and parts of their life, and that he speaks to them and to their fear and to their anxiety. And the irony of that is folks who have been disenfranchised in other ways see very much what he says as an effort to separate them even further from what they've gained in the last few years. And in some way, I apologize. I rarely want to talk about politics in such a way from the pulpit, but it's just so impossible for us to get away from. And I think it's so important not to talk about it and fight about it, but to hear and to listen and to try to make our point of connection, because this is what's happening in our country right now. I have friends who didn't go home for the holidays because they didn't want to get into fights over the dinner table with their families. And for me, in my position here, that's my bigger concern, is that we're losing the ability to listen to one another. We're losing the ability to disagree. And I'm particularly sensitive to this because I stand in this pulpit today because this diocese had a vicious split, this church. I mean, the larger Episcopal church had a vicious split over disagreements in theology because we couldn't sit at the same table. We couldn't gather at the same table and realize that God loved all of us more than we could ever ask or imagine, and that we were welcome as we were. We could not see that in the other. We have a church worshiping downstairs for the same reason. It's everywhere. And you hear me talk about unity, you hear me talking about listening to the other, And it's because I don't know if there's anything more important that we as the church can offer to this world, but hope that we can be heard and listened to and loved as we are. That our enemies just might be able to see us as people who are valuable and people who have worth, and that we might be able to see the same in our enemies and those whom we disagree with. I stand proudly in this pulpit because I know this is a church that has people on both sides of our political divides in our country. And we worship together. We shake each other's hands at the peace. We give each other hugs. We share time and conversation at coffee hour. And to my knowledge, while we've talked about politics, we have not gotten in any nasty fights or disagreements. We feel passionately about what we believe and about who we are, but we find a way to talk and to live in the midst of it. The reality of our gospel is the reality of reconciliation, of unity, of new life, of a God who looks at us and says, yes, you've made a mess of things, and yes, you don't want to talk to your neighbor, and yes, I know why they're the worst person in the world, but just try for a second to see them as I see them. Just try for a moment to understand that I love them as much as I love you. And when that stops frustrating you, maybe you'll start seeing the beautiful child of God that I see. I am a disciple in that world. Jesus, in the story of the gospel today, went to four fishermen and called them into ministry. They were people that the rest of society had generally overlooked. If you know a little bit about the ancient Near East and Jewish culture and the way in which disciples were called by rabbis, you would know that these four men had been looked over. They had had an opportunity because they would have all been raised learning the scriptures, being taught by a rabbi. And when they were teenagers, they would have been examined by the rabbi. And if the rabbi had felt that they were worthy and had what it took to carry on his legacy and his theology and his yoke, as it was called, they would have been asked and invited to be disciples. And they would have left whatever they were doing and they would have followed that rabbi. But every one of them was turned down. They weren't the best of the best. They weren't good enough. And so they went with their fathers and they went out into the trade that their family plied. And that's where Jesus found them. He found the ones that someone else didn't want. And he said, come and follow me. He didn't examine them. He didn't make sure they were smart enough or capable enough. He didn't give them any tests or anything like that. He just simply said, come and follow. Because the only requirement of being a disciple of Christ is to follow. It's not about knowing everything or having all the right answers. It's not about having the best theology. It's about following. And in my experience, as we follow, we are led into grace, deeper love and appreciation of one another and ourselves. We are led into understanding, not just for ourselves, but for the world. And we are led into desiring justice in this world. Justice that looks like self-sacrifice, that looks like love, forgiveness, and grace. If there's one quality that Donald Trump shares with Jesus, it's that he makes people feel listened to, at least some people. And I think that is a quality that drew people to Jesus. I know it's what draws me to Jesus. And I just say that as someone who didn't vote for him and is trying to understand more and more about who my neighbors and what my neighbors saw in him. Please don't hear it as a political statement or as an endorsement or anything like that. He's a human being who is our leader. And in any way that he stands to defy the realities of justice and love and mercy in this world, he will find me standing against him. And in any ways that he finds ways in which to invite the estranged into new life and into hope and into prosperity, I will be on his side. I know there's a lot of fear and anxiety. There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of excitement. I've talked to parishioners who are over the moon about Trump's election. What I know, there's a lot of uncertainty, but what I know is that we're going to plow ahead day by day, week by week in this place. We're going to welcome the stranger. We're going to embrace everyone whom we meet. My hope and my promise is that anyone who walks through these doors, whether you've been here your entire lives or whether this is your first week here, will know that you are welcome here. And what I mean by you are welcome here is not just that, like, yeah, we're glad you're here so we can add you to the headcount and maybe put some money on the plate, but we're glad and you're welcome here because this can be a place for you to find a home spiritually, to find a community that supports and loves you, to find a community that's not going to abandon you based on your political beliefs, where we're going to have tables to eat around, where we're not going to, that are not going to degrade into fights, where you don't have to be afraid to come and eat for fear of being getting into a fight or being judged for what you believe or what you think. And for me, that it's a radical message. And it's one that I don't see in many other places, and it's one that I am excited that the church can provide. 2,000 years ago, Jesus started walking by the sea, and he started calling people to him. When you look at the final 12 disciples that were called, and you look at who they are and how they were described, they were a disparate group of folks. They were folks that I'm sure fought a lot and disagreed over many things. You had a tax collector and a zealot among Jesus' disciples. I don't know if there's two people in that society that would have hated each other more. You had an agent of the state who had ceded to Rome and worked as an agent of Rome to take and steal money from the people of God. And you had someone who had vowed their lives and had possibly even killed people or been part of conspiracies to kill people that looked very much like Matthew, that looked very much like a tax collector. You saw Jesus call Zacchaeus, son of a tree, who was despised in his neighborhood, who was the chief tax collector, and his life was transformed. No matter who you are, God is overwhelmingly and passionately in love with you. If you came into this room and to worship today with any kind of anxiety about who you were or what you thought, what you believed, who you voted for, hear me say that God loves you entirely and completely. God is in the midst of everything that you do and celebrates who you are. Not because you don't make mistakes, not because you're perfect, not because you're good enough, but because of God's good grace. That when he sees you and I, he sees the person of Jesus, his son, our Messiah, and says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You are the beloved of Christ. You are the beloved of God. You are invited to this table. And we gather around it to find deeper unity and love, mercy and peace. We come to this table so that estrangement and division might be driven away, that our eyes might be open to the other, and that we might be able to understand a little bit more every day about why and how God sees and loves the people around us. We have a new president. And in 4 more years, we'll have another election. And this process will continue as long as this country exists. We have had an interesting run the last 225 years, and we're still here. And I say that as I think directly about the fact that we are a part of a church, right? We're part of the Christian church. This started 2,000 years ago. Think about how bad we are at this. Think about how many awful leaders we have elected over the last 2,000 years. We've been into wars where we've killed each other, where Protestants killed Catholics, Roman Catholics killed Protestants, and everyone drowned Anabaptists. There was 100 years. It's 100 years of Christians killing each other over politics and over theology and over all kinds of things. We led the Crusades and the Inquisitions. We tortured people. We've elected popes that have ended up in Dante's Inferno while they're still alive. You get the idea of kind of the process and the path that we've come through to here. And I'm not saying anything that's good. I'm not saying that's great. You know, that's what we're going for. But what I'm saying is that for me, there's no greater testament that God exists and that we're onto something here than the fact that this church exists 2,000 years after its start, because we have done everything in our power to destroy it. We've been over backwards to ostracize and to cast out and to make people not feel welcome in this place. I'm not saying us necessarily, but the church, and I own that. I'm a part of that. I am a figurehead in an institution that has caused great harm and great pain in many people's lives. I have to sit with that every day as I meet some of these people who have to get used to and comfortable with me just because of what I do for a living and because of what I believe, because they've had such negative connotations with what we are and who we are. And for me, my protest, what it means for me to stand up and to defy those kinds of sentiments is to stand up and to be a figure and a person of love and of grace and of mercy, to offer and extend radical welcome, not just to you, but to all, and to remind everyone that this place isn't a place of judgment and strife and being right. It's a place of being loved when we're wrong, being accepted wherever we are, and being welcomed as a stranger and becoming family. I'm excited to do that for another 4 years with you. I'm excited to continue to build a foundation on which the next 2,000 years of the church will build. And you and I get to be a part of it. We get to be a part of steering that boat more toward grace and more toward love and more toward life, away from the divisions of politics and of strife and more towards the love and the peace of God, the grace and mercy that is given to each and every one of us. And in the midst of that, I believe we will find a deeper and deeper respect and love, not only for God, but for one another. And I am so honored and privileged to be a part of it with you. So wherever you are today, know that you are loved, know that you are welcome, and know that this is a table and a place for you, and that we will and I will strive every day to listen to you better, to hear you more fully, and to love you as you are, no matter how much we may differ or be alike. Amen.